I think we're back on. So how's everybody doing? You guys still awake? It's nice. Good job, everybody. All right, now we're going to make a project from scratch. I don't know, did you guys, were most of you able to download Blend and kind of the phone tools before you came? Did a couple of you guys do that? Who did that? Went and actually downloaded? Oh, good, good. A whole bunch of you. This is one where you can actually follow along a little bit. I'll try not to go too fast. Ask a lot of questions. I'll try to leave a little bit of time for that. And this one will be less smoke and mirrors, where the previous ones I was like, oh, I did this template and it just magically works. Ah. I like those demos, but these ones are fun too. All right, so first I've opened up Expression Blend. Go ahead. I'm just kidding. File, new project. And by default, if I had opened this from scratch, it would come up with a dialogue that says open different projects, new project, or open a project, or cancel the dialogue. So we have the Windows Phone application. We could create a Windows Phone data-bound application that's just sort of built all around binding in data. There's a Panorama application. Really, all this means is that the home screen or the main page's content will be a panorama. That's all it does. It also sets the orientation to only be portrait, like a panorama, but it doesn't do much else. There's a Windows Phone Pivot application, and then there's a Windows Phone, which is the same thing as a panorama, but just using a pivot on the main page, and the Windows Phone Control Library. Right now, we're just going to do a Windows Phone application, and I'm going to call this Weather Project. You can call it whatever you want. And I'll try to spell right. All right. So by default, it puts in kind of this fake panorama page of content. So the very first thing that I'm actually going to do is go to my layout root and, by the way, there was a big portion of you who hadn't done or used Blend at all. So maybe before I dive into the application, I'm just going to show you a little Blend. Is that cool? Is everybody down with that? All right, so you have a lot of different things. I showed you guys the devices over here on the left-hand side. This is where you can switch between light theme and dark theme. If I was pushing out to a device, I would choose this instead of the emulator. So if I had connected a phone to my laptop via USB, that's all I'd need to switch. When I hit F5, it would come up on the phone rather than on the device emulator. As well as here's the accent color, and then by default, what orientation your phone is in. When I hit F5 and it builds the project, you can switch the emulator's orientation too, right, like this, just to test your different UIs. And then over here, if we go back to Blend, we have our Objects and Timeline panel. The Objects and Timeline panel is basically layers. If you're familiar with Photoshop or Illustrator, it's basically your layers. All your different objects that exist. The reason it's called the Objects and Timeline panel is it's very similar to After Effects in the fact that as soon as you create a storyboard animation, I'm going to do that right now, call it, this isn't part of the main application, this is just showing you Blend, and hit, I'm going to call this SB1. Now I get right next to my objects a little timeline for every single different object. So, if I went to this main text and selected it, inserted a keyframe, went out here, drag it down here, went over here, drag it over here. Now, if I played back my storyboard, this is what would happen. It's beautiful, I know. But that's why it's called the Objects and Timeline panel, because you can see the objects as well as timeline if you're working on animation. There's also two different workspaces. There's the design animation or workspace, and then there's the animation workspace, which allows you to flip into this mode, and then it's a little bit better for doing the animation. You have more room for your timeline, is all that that does. So I normally work in design. Every once in a while I'm working on animations, maybe 10% of the time. I switch into that mode. All right, let's close out of that animation and now we're just working by default. Over here is your properties. And by the way, when I say over here, it's kind of relative because I could drag these menus around and put them anywhere. The only thing that's consistent about that is if you go up to Windows, you can turn on and off which panels are showing by clicking on this. So I do want my properties open as well as my project. And I want it over here because this is usually how I work. I usually work with my resources, my data, and my properties over on one side. And then over here, I usually have device states and my project. The project panel is just a list of all the files. This is just like the Solution Explorer in Visual Studio. It's basically all the files that are about to get zipped up when you run F5 and then pushed out to the phone. So a .zap, which is the file extension of a Windows Phone application, it's like the name of your project, project01.zap.xap, is actually, if you renamed it, just a zip file. Of course, it pushes everything into DLLs and things like that, but mostly it's just a zip file. Then we have resources. This is all color resources, styles, margins, anything that you saved into resources. And then we have data. We're going to work with the data panel a little bit. And this is one of the key features that sells me on Blend. I love the dummy data. So designers, one of the problems with doing design and real rich applications is the fact that sometimes your developer hasn't gotten real data yet or real UI for you to work on, right? So then you're working on fake UI. Blend allows you to really quickly throw data into your application that's fake, and your designer is going to love it because then they can style up real-ish visuals. The artboard here, you can draw something out on it. You can manipulate it there. You won't catch me doing it very, very often. But the cool thing about the artboard is it can split view. And so in split view, you can have the XAML view as well as the code. So I could just come here and type in red, and now it's red. You can edit everything either in the code, on the page, or if I went over here to my properties, I could edit the color here too. So that's one of my favorite things about it. Designers are very comfortable with it, as well as developers can get their thing done in it too. All right. Does everyone feel comfortable with Blend now? All right. I know you guys will use it all the time. My favorite view, I do split view. I'll try not to write too much code, but every once in a while I'll come down here and edit a property just to remind you that you can do that. But in general, I want you guys to be able to preview what we're working on, so I'll usually work in the artboard editor. And I'll try to keep editing properties in the properties panel rather than code. However, once you've been working in this for a little while, you find yourself doing a lot of it in code. That's just the way it is. All right, so the very first thing I'm going to do is go to my layout root and hit delete. I've got nothing on here. So I'm going to make a panorama page, and panoramas, can anyone give me a rule that a panorama page has? Yes, that's a great one. Usually, that's a rule of thumb. Don't want to go over 5 panels because of performance reasons. Portrait mode. Did somebody say, isn't that what somebody said? Yes. You only want to use a panorama in portrait. Good, that's 2. The third one that I can think of off the top of my head is that you usually don't use a system tray up at the top. So the very first thing that I'm going to do is go to my page and supported orientation. I'm going to choose portrait, and then I'm going to uncheck the system tray checkbox, and so that's gone. Now I've got nothing there on this page, but I'm going to pop in a root grid, and there's a couple of different ways to do this. In code, I could come down here and type grid, which I'm not going to do, remember, because I said I wasn't going to use that thing all the time. Or you could select grid up here, and you could draw one into the content. Or a quick trick when you're just inserting items all the time is just double-click, and it will just pop it in there. So double-click anything over here, any of these panels, and it will just pop it onto the screen. So now I've got a grid. Underneath all of your toolbars are the hidden controls that exist. If you've downloaded and installed the toolkit, I should probably add those references, by the way, before we get started. Let's do that really quickly, because I don't have the toolkit references. I'm going to add this reference, and then I'm going to go to my Silverlight toolkit bin and just add microsoft.phone.controls. I will also, if I'm going to do the page transitions, I got to add the blend one, so we'll do that in a second. Anyway, next thing I want to do, underneath all these tools on the left-hand side, I've got my assets menu, and I'm going to come down here and type panorama. There it is. There's a couple different ways I could do it. Draw it, write it in code. I'm going to double-click. And by default, for some reason, I very rarely rely on Blend completely to do my writing of code. It's given it a write margin of 180 and a bottom margin of 200. You would never have this, so you could either go to your code and delete it, which is an easy way to do it, or just come over here to your margins and do reset. And by default, there's a hard-coded width and height for whatever reason. There's also a really quick way around this in Blend that I use all the time. Whenever I double-click and insert something, I just go auto-size, fill. So usually when I'm sticking something in off the toolbar, I want it to fill the screen. Now if we hit save and F5, it's going to run this project, and we'll have the basics of a panorama that I can pano through. If you want to add items, once again, you can add it in the code, or there's a quick shortcut. Right-click on a panorama and just go add panorama item. Now I've got three panorama items. Because you guys are familiar with the little weather application we made earlier, and so I don't have to explain the whole concept of an application again or what we're going to be working towards, I'm just going to rebuild that application in this app or in this session. So first thing, I'm going to select the first panorama item. And I'm going to give its title weather. Second one I'll call alerts in the header. And the third one I'm going to call images. Now, this is where I get to the part of my dummy data. So this is all good and great. My developer said, we're going to use a panorama. Me and him have been working together on this stuff, and he wants me to style up kind of the items that are going to go into this list. However, he doesn't have any data for me. We're not working from the real server or whatever, and I need all this weather data coming in. So how am I going to style up those weather controls if I don't have them? So you can come over here to your data tab and hit new data collection, and you can create new sample data. I know somebody who went to art school, for someone like myself who went to art school to be this excited about data is wrong, I think. But I am. It's cool. So I'm going to call this weather sample data. Sorry, is this mic in a weird? Can you guys hear every little breeze I do? I'm going to try to. It's the weather app. So I've got weather sample data and then a collection of data. Right now, I have two different properties. So say I was doing a phone book app. I could literally come in here and choose my type of string, number, boolean, or image, which is awesome. I'm going to choose string, and I'm going to also be able to choose whether or not it's a address, a colors, company name, date, email address, name, phone number, all this stuff. So this is really cool. Right now, I'm just going to stick with, I'll probably stick with just the lorem ipsum filler text. And I'm going to call this, because I'm going to use the first one should be the actual property of weather. I'm going to say 8 characters long in one word, right? So it would say clear, sunny, whatever. Imagine that. So I'm going to type this in, and I'm going to call this the actual weather. The next property on here, I'm going to change to the day of the week. So I'm going to just also give that a string and make it one character. So this would say Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'm going to say day. And then we probably want a high and a low temperature. So the high may be 50 Fahrenheit and the low might be 45 Fahrenheit. So here we go. Oops, wrong button. I'm going to add a new one, and this one will be a number, and it will have two different things, a max length of 2, and I will say low temp. And make one more and call it high temp. And also make it a number with 2 value. And that's all I have to do. I'm done. I've got all my data that I need for this application, except for, oh wait, I was going to make alerts data too. So let's do that one more time. New sample data, alerts sample data, hit OK. And in my alerts sample data, I probably only need a title and a description. That's all I need in order to start doing this. The title will probably be like 2 words, up to 8 characters. And my description will probably be like 20 words. Oops, not number. String and 20 words. All right. So I've got weather sample data that has a day, a high temp, a low temp, and weather. And then I've got a collection for alert sample data that has a description and a title. Now, when I get to this point, I need to make that data to appear on the screen. It will probably be this large, complex thing that I need my developer to come in and do this. Not really. You just grab the collection of my weather data, and I drag it out, and it makes a list for me. I also need to right-click on this, just like I did, auto-size and fill. If I go to my alerts data and pull this data in, does the same thing. Auto size fill. Now at this point it's completely unstyled data. It's really ugly. And I'm just going to go to it and look, it already scrolls because it's a list box, scrolls up and down. This one has a little bit more data. Oh, one of the other things that you can potentially do is click here and edit how many things are in your data set. So like weather sample data, I probably don't want to say I know the next 10 days of weather. You're probably comfortable with like 6 days of weather. So I'll change that. That's how you would do that. All right. So first thing I'm going to do is now style this up. I want to style up the data that's appearing here, give it a little bit of a visual polish. So all I need to do is click on that list box that's created, edit template, edit additional templates, sorry, edit generated items template. And then before, what I did was apply a resource, right? So there was all these resources that I had those aren't existing in this project currently. I need to actually make those. So I'm going to say edit the current that we're in. And now, one of the cool things about this is, if you've ever worked in Illustrator or anything like that, when you're working on a whole bunch of layers, if you double-click and drill down into something, it kind of like just brings you into that section of code. And the same thing's true for Blend. I double clicked on that template and you'll notice I just have 4 text boxes right here. I have one that's bound, if you look in my code, to the day temperature, the high temperature, the low temperature, and the weather. So the very first thing that I probably want is the weather. So I just resort this and now I'm going to apply some styling to it. Same way that you would style anything in Blend. I'm going to set the foreground to actually be phone accent brush. I'm going to set the font size, or the font family actually, down here to be semi-bold. And then I'm going to set the font size to be something like 75. And it applies to all of them, right? Because it's just a single data template. The next thing that I want to do is probably make the day a little bit bigger. So I'm going to do this rapidly so I'm not wasting too much time on it, but let's choose a font size, system resource, font size large, and then these guys will remain normal font size. Okay, so in my previous application I had moved all that stuff over to the right. Let's do that really quickly. So if I zoom in on this guy, you can right-click on these things, and you know, like in any sort of design program, you can hit Control-G and things. If you're in Photoshop or whatever, you can do combine, or you can say group into, and I'm going to group these guys into another stack panel. Anything inside of a stack panel is going to stack one on top of the other. Right now they're stacking vertically, but I'm going to change that orientation to horizontal. And now I need to add a couple more text blocks. So I'm going to copy and paste. This one, I'm going to change the text to be a little slash. Oops. I'm going to copy and paste again, paste again. And these ones will be my little degree symbols. So I'm going to change that text to 00. And I'm going to change it to a small font size, like font size 10 or something like that. So they look like little degrees. There we go. And now all I need to do is sort these. There we go. So now we've got our high-low temperature, right? These ones will always be look like the degree sign. This one will always be a slash. These two will be different for every day's high and low temperature. So this guy actually has a width on it. I'm going to take that width off. There we go. Next thing that I'm going to do is group up these two guys. So group into, and I'm just going to say a canvas on this and get rid of that width. And then in order to move these guys over, I'm just going to give them a little bit of a margin on that left. Maybe like a 220 pixel margin. So they're over here. And yes?
Is it a good idea to work in absolute?
Good. This is a fantastic question. Right now I have a list box that's generating multiple items, right? They're going all the way down the page. I've got a stack panel in there, and stack panel will measure every item, right, and stick them, whatever the height of the previous item is, the next one goes underneath it. So that's code that all has to run whenever items change size, right? But only when items change size. But whenever you're generating the UI for a long list, right, it needs to measure every single one. The one item in Silverlight that doesn't need to do that is canvas, right? Everything has an XY value in it, and if they change size, it doesn't matter, right? Because they don't measure their children. It's just an artboard, basically. On this list box, for performance reasons, I might, if I wasn't doing this sample, I would probably hard code all the left values, because they're all right basically off a X and a Y, right? So this one is top. This one's over 220, this one, right? I would probably, other than these guys, would all need to be in a stack panel, because if those numbers changed, you'd want them to move in and out. I would probably put that whole thing in a canvas for performance reasons. I probably wouldn't use all the layout that I'm using right now. That's a great question. As far as how much to happen in order for measure and arrange to happen to relay out the images, canvas requires none, because it's just an XY location, basically. Probably the most performant or most calculations that are necessary is grid, because you can do so much in a grid. You can stretch content, you can add columns and rows and doing all that calculation. And the thing that probably needs almost the least is probably a stack panel, because the math for a stack panel is so minuscule. Although once you're using any panel and it's calling measure and arrange, it runs pretty fast. I mean, Silverlight's pretty quick at laying out all this stuff. You just have to be aware of it at some degree, that you're just not like nesting grid after grid after grid inside of grid after grid, you know. But fantastic question. Anybody have any other questions about that in performance? Yeah. Yeah, so in that point, if that was the case that I was in, I wouldn't use Canvas, right? Because it wouldn't resize things. However, Silverlight is a beautiful for resizing elements. Like, if anyone's ever worked in HTML or Flex or something, you felt that pain of like trying to work in multiple resolutions. Silverlight has so many different ways to do it. Like width or height or horizontal or vertical alignment fits to its container, right? So it wouldn't matter what size the screen is, it would just fit, right? And then you add margin, and then you could add columns that are based on percentages, right? So if the screen width is 480 and all the column space by default is 24, but you're going up to a larger resolution, you'd want to do those as percentages probably, and then it would just grow and it would look the same in all the browsers. The one that's tricky is text, right? So every single vector item in Silverlight would scale very nicely. We even have this thing called ViewBox, and it basically, anything that you put inside it will scale to the size of that container, including, like, you could set it to stretch, you could set it to keep its, it's basically like the way an image stretches. And so a ViewBox is really nice control for multiple resolutions. So I use, I mean, ViewBox is over here, right there. And if I pop that in, anything inside of that would scale up and down to be the size. However, like we were saying, for performance reasons, the more items you get and the more things you're raising and scaling and things like that, it might become an issue. So if you want a very performant snapping app in multiple resolutions, you might have to do what you have to do in other platforms. And your choice, but swap between templates depending on resolutions. Decide which XAML file you're going to use and load into your application. And that's just sort of me talking and us not actually having multiple resolutions to deal with. And who knows, we may come out with that and there may be an app platform solution for that, for templating or things like that. So, great question though. And I'm going to move this margin up just a little bit, tuck that in a little closer. Run our project. And now how these are all kind of styled like this. Let's do the same on the alerts, just because we can. So I'm going to come over here. Oop, I got to get out of my grouped. See how I drilled just down into this item template, and it's only showing me those layers. I loved it, but now I got to get back up to see all the XAML on this page. So I just click the up button. All right, let's go over here to this list box. For the sake of time, I'm probably not going to do all the images. Although, did you see when I was doing the data over here? There is actually a property called image. It will generate a list of images for you, which is really pretty cool. Fairly cool. So here we go. I've got my list box. I need to do, once again, edit additional templates, item template, and edit the current one. The very first thing I need to do is move the layer with the title text to the top. And then, because I wanted this whole thing to wrap, I'm going to set that stack panel's default width to be like 80. Oh, let me go over to my properties. Oop, no, a lot more than that, 180. I think that's what I was looking for. Actually, maybe 200. I probably shouldn't be worrying about this, but. And then the second thing I need to do is see how this text is just bleeding off the page. I need to come down to the property on the text and set it to wrap. So now I've got this text. Now I'm going to style this guy really quickly. Let's make it font weight semi-bold, and then we'll give it an accent color, foreground, phone accent brush. The other thing I should probably do on the stack panel is make a bottom margin so that they're not all stacked right up next to each other. Now, remember that, let me do one more thing. I'm just getting way too into this, but I'm going to make this light text. Center light. And then I'm going to make this top one font size large. There we go. Now we've got all the styling for this template. If I drill up out of this, the only thing that I've left to do is change my panel type. Now, panels are awesome in Silverlight. You can use the default panels, which are like stack panel, wrap panel, grid. Or, I don't know if you've looked into this yet, but you can write your own panels. It's all simple math. So you can basically, if this item's here, move the next item here, or depending on these different properties. I've written a couple of panels. There's also panels that you can go out there and download for free. It's like the elliptical panel and things like that. So I'm going to go over here to my list box, go edit additional templates, and of course it allows me to edit the layout of my items panel. So I'm going to come here and create empty. I'll just leave the default name. If I jump up to it, it's got a stack panel in it by default. I'm going to get rid of that and insert a wrap panel. Just double click. And now these items begin to wrap. What was just stacking on top of each other, it's going left to right. Wrap panels have orientation, right? So just like stack panels. All right, let's save, hit F5 on this. All right, does everybody get, everybody, any questions about the dummy data in Blend? No. Any questions about styling in Blend so far with the data templates? Nope, we're doing pretty good. All right, now let's go in and let's make some of the secondary pages. So I'm going to skip images just for the sake of time. Technically, we only have like 20 minutes left in this session, so I got to save some time where I can. And I'm going to come up to my project, and I'm going to make a new page. Once again, add a new item. And there's the panorama page, the pivot page options, Windows Phone page. I'm going to call this Alert Details. And it's basically just the alerts detail page, but I'm gonna or the default pivot page, but I'm gonna bind this data to we'll change this top one to be always consistent. So we'll say alerts detail or alert details, and then this top header I'm gonna bind to a little data. Remember the two dummy data properties I made were title and description. I'm going to bind to those two properties. So I'm just going to say, instead of text equal page name, I'm going to say title. Oh, binding. This is one of the few times I'm actually going to use the code editor instead of the text editor. And then I'm going to insert a text block down here in this main content area. So double click here. By the way, one of the things that really bugs me about the default controls, by default on Windows Phone, if you're using this page, the margins would be 24 on the left and right. The margins, as you can see up here, are 24 on this next one. But for some reason, this content area, it's 12 and 12. So just because I'm a pixel guy, I'm going to change that to be the right amount. So that's a little FYI. When you go and generate this template, it's wrong by default for whatever reason. I'll track them down someday who's responsible for that. Oh, do they? Ah, interesting. That's cool. It's halfway there. Text wrapping wrap, and then I'm just going to say binding is description. Oops. All right, so a couple of the questions I got during the break was how to do the system tray and the app bar. So by default, when you make a default page, you have a system tray up at the top. If I click on the phone application page, it's the top level thing when I'm designing it. If I click on that, I will have over here the property of show system tray, and I can turn that guy on and off. If I scroll down a little bit farther, application bar. Now, application bar has new, which basically means you could create multiple instances of the application bar. Can anyone think of why you might want multiple instances of an app bar? Like pivot, switching between pivots, you might want to change the app bar to different things. I'm going to create an app bar right now for the sake of it. Let's see. Oh, I scrolled up too far. Hit app bar. And you can choose the background color and all that. By default, it's the default. But the main thing that you want is a buttons collection. There's two different collections that you can add things to. There's the buttons collection and the menu items collection. So if I come in here, add a new button item, then you can choose the plus icon. And maybe one of the things we might want to do is put a map of the weather alert on this page. So we'll see if we have time for that. And we'll call this text zoom in. And we're going to rename this guy. Oh, we'll have to do that in the code. Make another guy. Oops. The UI on this screen is a little wonky. And then I'll do the minus sign. And I'll call this text zoom out. Oh, I need to space that. Okay. Now, at the bottom of my page, I have an app bar with a zoom in and zoom out screen. Is everybody able to sort of figure out what I was doing there? In the code, I'll show you that really quickly. Over here in my layers panel, I can still select the app bar. And then we have shell application bar, and then we have an application icon button. And it's got the icon URL, is enabled equals true, and then we've got the text right there. So I can add names to that. I could click over here, call this one zoom in, name the layer. That way I can add some code to it. And then zoom out. All right. Also, in my content details, I might want to move this text up. And then one of the things I might want to draw directly underneath it is a map control. So this is a control that we could add. Pinch and zoom would work on it by default, but we could add some controls like zoom in and out, show roads, different states on the map, things like that. So actually, if I run this project, by default, it's still going to go back to the panorama. One of the little side notes that I'm going to make about using Blend or Visual Studio, you can really easily, if you're still doing prototyping in one file and you want to go design another file, by default, see how mainpage.xaml is kind of white and bolder? If I go over to my alerts detail page, I can right-click on it, hit startup. You see that little option there, startup, and hit F5. And now that is going to be the default page that comes up. Oh, there we go. Got a little map control in it. Now, one of the things that I want to do, oh, cool, gives me the must sign into my developer account in order to really utilize that. I'm going to add a behavior. Who here is familiar with behaviors in Silverlight? A very limited group, subset of it. How am I doing on time, by the way? I think I have until 3:45, right? Is that correct? I've got a sheet over here somewhere. I don't know where I throw. So we'll just keep going all day. I'm going to go all the way till 6. I'm just kidding. Behaviors are little pieces of code that are super blend friendly, and thus very designer friendly. So the cool thing about behaviors is you can add them to your project. You have to have the right references though, just like the toolkit. I'm going to add some references really quick, add references, and these little pieces of code are actually in Microsoft SDK Expression because they were built by the Blend team. So one of the great wonders of working at Microsoft is you have so many different teams working on things that sometimes they're not as nicely packaged as you'd like, but they're still relatively easy to track down. So I'm going to add these two DLLs, which are Microsoft Expression.interactions and System.windows.interactivity. These are the two that are required for you to use behaviors. And I'll show you what behaviors are here in a second. So now I'm going to go add an existing item. And I'm going to go to my little folder right here. I thought I had one in here, and maybe I do not. Apologies, I don't have one. One of the quick examples of how behaviors do work though, since I had one that was nicely written and I misplaced it. Let's go back to the main page, and I'm just going to go to that third empty wrap panel that has an image in it. or pano item, or that was going to have images in it, and I'm going to create a button. So the cool thing with a blend is, once again, these controls that Arturo has been talking about, they're very easy to utilize. I'm just going to double click and insert this button. And this is not how the application was originally intended to work. I was going to set it all up to work the way that the other applications were working, but I forgot to move that into my, so I'm going to say, call this alerts page. And now there is a bunch of behaviors already baked into Blend. So if I come down here to behaviors, these are little things that you can just drag and drop out. But call method to action, go to state action, and navigate to a page action. So this little navigate to a page action is one that you could just drag and drop on there, and then on any sort of action, it would navigate to that page. However, this is also built into Blend. So if I right-click, I could say navigate to, and then it will just give me a list of all the pages in the project. So it becomes very easy to do navigation on buttons. And hyperlink buttons as well. Oh, so I need to set this guy as my startup. Run the project. Does anyone have any questions about navigation? I mean, it's really right-click on a button, and now I've gone to that page. It's fairly simple. Now, I'm going to open this project, this solution, in Visual Studio, and we might do a little bit of coding. But first, before we get too deep into that, just so I get it in the next couple of minutes, let's do some actual animation on this. Remember how last time when we were fixing it, we had to put a pop-up with our load-in motion on it. So first thing that I'm going to do after my panorama inside of this grid is I'm going to make a pop-up. By the way, you'll notice how I'm using this sort of assets thing like crazy. It makes it in Visual Studio really painful, like, to actually remember what the control is and type it out and stuff. It's like, this is super simple. So I've got a pop-up with a grid on it. Once again, pops it in the wrong size. So I've got to select on the grid inside of it, go auto size fill, so that it fills up the whole thing. Next, I'm going to take some text, and the name of our application is WeatherWatch, although I never renamed this pano to WeatherWatch, which is a really easy thing to do, just with all the properties. It's the exact same. I'm going to type it in here. Weather. Just a little side note. You guys saw me do that in the previous demo, but all right. So notice how I hid this layer over here too. You can just hide them with the eyes. If you're familiar with any sort of design application like that's in Adobe, all the same keyboards work. Shortcuts work. Control plus. Control minus. Control zero, space bar to drag this guy around, all those same sort of things work. But first, let's do this. So I'm going to make a nice big text box. First one was the whole size. Okay. Type in. Okay, it's just white text. Don't be scared, it's still there. There we go. It loves to close it. So I'm going to turn this top layer or grid into a canvas. So all I need to do is change layout type, grid equals a canvas. That way I won't have all this pain of trying to resize and deal with margins and padding and things like that. Okay, so that text is really white. I doubt you can see that on the projector. So I'm going to turn that black. I'm going to go change it this to local system resource, semi-bold. Actually, we could also just convert this to Sego WP bold, but oops. Loves to click away from me. I guess pop-ups are a little bit finicky. Can I not select it? I'll bet if I lock my panorama, I won't be feeling this pain. There we go. Now, let's go up here to 80 point again. I'm going to put this guy like right there. And then I'm going to copy and paste it. And I'm going to say watch. And I'm going to put this right here. All right, so there is our load-in screen. Really simple and really quick. First thing that I need to do is make a new storyboard. I've already got this one here, so I'm going to use that guy because it's empty now. I'm going to go into my design workspace. I showed at the beginning of the session, but the design workspace, or the animation workspace, not the design workspace, gives you, as soon as you go into a storyboard, a big long timeline for you to edit. So the very first thing I'm going to do is select both my layers, give them a keyframe. How many of you guys have done like sort of motion editing and motion design? A few of you. Oh, that's better than I thought. That's awesome. Cool. That's great. That's better than most places. And then I'm going to come out here, and even though it loves to disappear on me, I'm going to just drag, well, one of these guys off the screen. Now I'm going to come right here, put another keyframe in for this guy. And then I'm going to drag this guy off the screen. By the way, these are kind of long animations that I'm doing. By default, I don't think we have built onto the phone animations that are longer than like 0.3, 0.4 of a second. People love to me, the sign of a rookie motion designer is a too overly long and drawn out animation. When the animation is like, hey, look at me, I'm an animation, oh, I'm there. Kind of animation for animation's sake. When animation is really serving a purpose and getting you from point A to point B, they're always very quick and it's motion. So these ones, by the way, since I'm not a motion designer, UI designer, I'm sure Jeff will forgive me. These are super long, slow motion. All right, and then the last thing that I'm going to do on this animation, remember last time we did it in code? At the end of this animation, I am literally going to close this pop-up. So I'm going to select this pop-up right here. Oh, you know what would be even nicer? Let's fade out the storyboard a little bit. So I'm going to give it a storyboard and come out a couple more seconds. And then opacity down to zero. So it fades out. And then the pop-up is open. It's closed. So here we go. Beautiful. Yes. Ah, yes, great question. Silverlight, I'm not sure, it basically has a max frame rate. So before, if you were familiar with working in frames instead of time-based animation, this is time-based animation. Frames is like, oh, I have 30 frames, and if my processor gets chugged down, it's like going to take me 2 seconds to get across this instead of just 1 second. Silverlight will use as many frames as possible, but it will always be on time. And so if you have an animation that's a 1 second long animation, depending on how much processor you have, you could use up to 120 frames. It would just happen. But if you're starting to get bogged down, it might only be able to use 5 frames. But it will always get there within 1 second. So timing and syncing, like I don't know if you ever did flash animation back in the day and had to try to sync it to lips and stuff. What a pain. It was huge, huge pain. But time-based animation like After Effects and things like that, it's much more similar. You can set your max frame rate. No, you set it for the whole application. Sorry. When you set it, you can set max frame rate, and I believe level. And something that basically says, like, animations take up quite a bit of processor, right? And so if you're firing a ton of animations, want to say max frame rate of 24 or max frame rate of 30, just so you don't take up that extra processor. with it, because the human eye really has a hard time with anything over 30 anyway. So, yes. Yes. There's a lot of different ways to do it. Every single storyboard and animation has events within it, as well as timed events that can happen. One, it's time-based. The best way to probably do it on Windows Phone, we don't do a lot of it. Not like...